Digital 410 Productions proudly presents the What's in Your Head podcast.
Digitized live from
your company name here. Your
studios in Cape Coral, Florida. It's the What's in Your Head podcast.
We're going to band together and sell feet pics online. Oh, you and Lindsay are? Well, as long as we get a 50% cut.
I thought she was talking about us. And I said, clearly she hasn't seen my fucking athlete foot riddled ass.
Don said, I thought she was talking about us. Yeah.
I've been going to the gym for 12 years. I got a bad case of athlete's foot I can never get rid of.
Oh, man.
I got
did
pregnant
you just
feet.
Shit yourself? Bye.
As they say in the clink,
love
I
you,
got
goodbye.
Pregnant feet.
Go away.
God. It's what they call a lover's quarrel.
Do you quarrel, sir?
Do you Do you thumb your nose at me?
Do you bite your thumb at me, sir? Go away.
That was actually pretty good. That was long before the young kids in their Hamilton with the rap. No, the late 90s remake of Romeo and Juliet with, you know, getting rid of the swords and having the guns and but doing the modern twist, but with the old English dialogue, was fucking genius.
Yeah, I thought it was pretty cool.
Oh, Clara Danes.
I liked it. What was it, 1996?
I don't know. Let's find out. Oh, Clara Danes. How I love
thee. I think that's when it
came
out.
Let me count the ways. Did you guys ever do Shakespeare?
In school?
Yeah.
Not a performance, but we read. I mean, we had to read it in the class.
In my ghetto ass school, the one that no longer exists, I just recently found out, the one that was on the Air Force base that I always talk about. One of the things the entire fifth grade did, it was like every year. So like when you're second grade, first grade, fourth grade, you couldn't fucking wait. Like, ooh, they had this crazy old fucking hippie chick come in, and the entire fifth grade did Shakespeare. Granted, they weren't, it was the fifth grade medley equivalent of Shakespeare plays, right? Comes down and you like do five lines of Romeo and Juliet and goes up, and then here comes eight lines of Hamlet. You know, it was basically a montage, and I was in there. Had my cute little William Shakespeare-esque outfit on. I think I had two lines. But the play that always sticks in my mind, once again, it's fifth grade. I'm 46 years old now. I don't even know what play it was from, but once again, they're just little snippets of these plays. Apparently, inside the play, it was very meta. Inside the play, there was another play going on, and the buffoon played the brick wall, because in the play, you know, you had the male and the female professing their love to each other, and the big crescendo is they lean in the kiss, but the idiot who's playing the wall leans and gets in the way, and they kiss him on each side's face, and he goes, "They love me!" That's all I remember of the play. Can't remember anything else of it, but that's like the one thing I remember Shakespeare. But because of fifth grade and doing that, that was like the one cool thing at our school. Like, you looked forward to, like, oh, I can't wait till I'm in fifth grade so we can do Shakespeare. But yeah, that was my only time doing any school production.
When we did Shakespeare, he was writing it out and handing it to us because we were acting it out.
Yeah, because Morgan's so old. He's from the time where men had to play women.
I thought he was in the original play.
Yeah, he was.
Shakespeare wrote it.
He was at Globe Theatre.
That's what I'm saying. He was writing it and handing it to us to act out.
In between every time he had to pack a new opium pipe. I think it was Shakespeare. They said they found a bunch of old opium pipes underneath his place. Romeo and Juliet. No, that's 2013. Well, it was 1996, the year before I graduated. Leonardo DiCaprio, Claire Danes, John Leguizamo, Harold, whatever. You remember him as the black guy in the wheelchair from the show Oz? Yep, he was in it. I don't remember Paul Rudd being in that.
Yeah, he played he was the astronaut at the party. He was the guy that she was supposed to marry.
Well, you really have seen this movie. I haven't seen it probably since 1996, but I just realized Dash Mowick, he's the one who played the brother in Ray Donovan. He was punchy. on Ray Donovan. Yep. So there's some homework for you, young cats. If you haven't seen the 1996 remake of Romeo and Juliet, and the talk of the town at the time was John Leguizamo's 1911s. He had his badass 1911s. What's up, OG5? It's another episode of the What's in Your Head podcast where we think back to 1996 rom-coms and teen movies. Every girl was in love with Leonardo DiCaprio from Romeo and Juliet. They all had the t-shirts and the posters. What was another t-shirt of that era, Mike? You're too young, but Morgan, you were older, but you saw the high school kids running around with them. You know what I got my stuck? It really got me in my crawl, but before I say, what other t-shirts did you see an inordinate amount of? But yeah, they loved the Romeo and Juliet shirts, the Les Mis shirts. You always had the chicks walking around in the Phantom of the Opera t-shirts.
I can't really think back, think of anything back in my day that was really...
Well, no one wore t-shirts in your day because they didn't start actually manufacturing print t-shirts until 1943. Prior to that, they were just white shirts you wore underneath your wool button-up. So
I can't imagine. Undershirts, if you will.
Undershirts, undergarments. Fun fact, have accurately created reproduction t-shirts, and the necklines on them are fucking huge or gargantuan.
Yeah.
And I don't think the civilian t-shirts were that wide. The only thing I can think of is two things. A, primarily that if someone got shot, you can stick your arm down underneath their shirt and feel around for a wound easier than trying to undo their web gear and pull their shit up. And two, the simplicity of getting dressed in a hurry with headgear on. The only thing I can think of. Because it's funny, people always give Navy the credit for bell-bottoms, right? When you hear you think Navy, you think bell-bottoms. But all trousers in World War II were what they called stovepipe legs. They weren't tapered. They're just one big, of course you had leggings on, so you couldn't really see other than the Navy. And the only thing I can think of is, why would you make big, wide pant legs? It's easier to get dressed with boots on, right? Or undressed with boots on, for that matter. So
makes sense.
Yeah, whatever you can do to minimize the amount of articles you have to change, maybe you shit yourself and you got lucky enough to get a clean pair of trousers. But it's a lot quicker not to take your boots off, but you never know. But yeah. Morgan's got, go ahead. I heard a well.
When I was in my, our tan undershirts were to size. Some of them were actually fucking...
Chokers.
So, yeah, I mean, yeah, you probably had. Did you have tans back then too, or did what were yours? Brown.
Oh yeah.
When did they get away from the wife beater?
Probably after World War II.
Yeah, because they had the t-shirts and then they had the wife beaters. Both. I have a brown wife beater.
Yeah, I don't. Maybe.
Yeah, I don't know. We didn't have them.
I don't think that was issued during Nam, because then I think they had green t-shirts.
Yeah.
Underneath their GI uniforms.
Well, it took them a while. It took them to like 1943 to figure out, especially for Marines, that hey, a bright white undershirt underneath a green Sage HBT jacket, probably then not the best thing for camouflage. Have these white triangles until they got all dirty and sweaty, but you're fresh off the landing craft, you got these white upside down triangles just hopping through the green forest, like, there's an easy place to settle on. So they didn't actually start issuing the green ones until 44-ish. So, but some of the enterprising guys were smart, right? As they're on their landing craft, they would go down to the mess and get the old coffee, and they'd bring up big old pots of coffee, and they would dye their white shirts brown so that, you don't have this big, bright, white, upside down triangle with your boss being open.
And you bring that up, and, when you're in some kind of, stealthy environment where, you need to lay low, or you need to, blend in, or, be as quiet as possible. My uniforms had fucking Velcro on them.
Yeah.
Well, so anytime you got caught on something, all you would hear was, and you grab your PC or whatever out of your pocket, because you used to fold it in half, put it in your pocket, or your beret, or whatever, if you were garrison or whatever the case. Anytime you open your freaking pocket, it was And it was like, they couldn't figure out to, you know, put buttons back on the fucking pockets, like the breast pockets, Velcro, the upper arm pockets, Velcro, the pockets on the trousers were Velcro. Everything was fucking Velcro. So that made zero sense to any of us when we were going through it. Like why they got rid of the buttons. And you think, okay, well, it's easier to undo that, but what if you're in a situation where you need something out of your pocket and you also have to be as stealthy as possible?
Well, do you remember the 2002?
Well, the advantage that I can see is during training, at least, you know, it's a lot easier to make an argument that your pocket wasn't undone with Velcro than it was. I mean, there wasn't any getting away with, you know, shit, I forgot the button in my pocket.
Yeah. I suppose. I mean,
well, do you guys remember the 2004 classic Garden State, the Zach Braff film that had Natalie Portman and Peter Sarsgaard in it?
Never saw it, honestly.
So Zach,
I never saw it, but I know it.
Zach Braff's character meets this kind of goofy girl, Natalie Portman, and then one night they go to a party. Well, it's Zach Braff's friend. Zach Braff's friend's a multi-billionaire, but he has no friends other than the three guys he knows from high school. So, like, when they're at his house smoking, they're literally like driving golf carts to his house. It's so big. But that was the joke in the movie. He got his billions of dollars because he invented silent Velcro that the military bought for their uniforms. Okay. So that was the joke in the movie. He figured out how to make silent Velcro.
Well, and you know, I'm sure the army would have figured out a way to adopt that at one point or another. But if that was possible,
yeah,
but it would have taken, because interesting, now they do, their PT test actually does not really consist of running, push-ups and sit-ups anymore. It's now like this fully integrated PT routine. And we were, when I was in AIT, we were some of the, test subjects for that.
For the PT
belt? No. the PT test. And we were actually out there setting some of the standards. You know, they were getting the averages and stuff like that from us as we were training and stuff like that. So prior to the new black and gold PT uniform, we had the old gray and black PT uniform. And they were changing over that system, and I've heard mixed reviews about stuff like that, you know, like the way that they changed it. Like, people thought it was so much easier to just do push-ups, sit-ups, and do a run and stay in shape. So, you know, it just, and that took, because I was training in 2011 in AIT, and it didn't take full effect for like another decade that they actually started implementing it and changing the uniform and all that stuff. So everything takes forever. And when it comes to the military, when it comes to the government.
This episode is brought to you by our friends over at Fume. Fume cartridges are crafted from medical-grade polyester designed for use with essential oils. Fume, a non-vape, non-nicotine, non-tobacco device, works by replacing the hand-to-mouth fixation, calming nervous tension through fidgeting, and distracts you from the bad habits with delicious flavors. Psychologists have shown stopping a bad habit cold turkey is very hard for your brain. The Fume handheld device has a built-in fidget, also has a weight similar to most vape pens. If you're interested in replacing old bad habits with new good habits, head on over to tryfume.com/D410M and get yourself a free pack of toppers with your purchase. The toppers is a perfect new accessory designed with your comfort in mind. Slip it onto the mouthpiece for a softer, warmer feel. So replace those old habits with a new habit, a good habit. Simply go to tryfume.com/D410M. That's tryfume.com/D410M. Not that I meant to turn us into a World War II thing, but you guys interested in the procedures of what you had to complete in the World War II fitness test compared to what you guys had to do?
Curious.
Sure.
So did you guys, pull-ups are unanimous, right? You guys had to do a certain amount of pull-ups as well?
No.
Not a requirement, but it was part of our PT routine. At least mine it was.
Test 1 pull-ups. This event requires a horizontal bar. that may be a pipe or a gymnasium horizontal bar or other rigid horizontal support, which is not over 1.5 inches in diameter. The bar should be high enough to permit the performer to hang at full length without touching, yada, yada, yada. I'm trying to see how many they had to do. But yeah, so pull-ups, squat jumps. There's some old school technology right there. Squatting on the right heel with fingers laced to the top of the head, palms down. So not even just a squat. You had to do like this, like you're like getting ready to get arrested. Spring upward until both knees are straight and both feet clear the ground. Jump just enough to permit strengthening of the knees without touching the ground. Do not jump any higher than necessary. So you had to do pull-ups, squat jumps, push-ups, which makes sense. And now, were you guys still doing sit-ups or did you do crunches? Because the crunches were supposed to be better for the back. Sit-ups were by the 90s where people were saying, you know, sit-ups are bad for the lower back.
I was doing sit-ups, but I think they converted to a version of crunches in the new system. I don't know what Morgan was doing back then, though.
We did push-ups, sit-ups, and a 2-mile run.
So, yeah, that was pretty much the implemented PT structure for probably the last 40 years.
300-yard run.
About a decade ago.
So, yeah, they had to do a 300-yard run. And then, so squat jumps, push-ups, sit-ups, 300-yard run. That was the outdoor. Indoor test was pull-ups, squat jumps, push-ups, sit-ups, indoor shuttle run, and 60-second squat thrust. You know, I didn't think about it until I got into my interest in World War II, but I know gym class had changed for my generation, and I know, obviously, Mike's, but we still had the old equipment around, so we still had the ropes hanging from the rafters in Kentucky, but we weren't allowed to touch them. You'd see the old honk, honk horn up the top. And then I remember when I moved to Grove City, they still had the old cargo net dangling from the rafters. It was pinned up. You couldn't get to it. And then the pegboards. And I realized, like, when I was 30, like, oh, they used to train high school boys in obstacles required for onboarding and offboarding military equipment post-World War II. I mean, cargo nets, ropes, all that stuff was, like, basically pre-boot camp shit to get young dudes and get them conditioned for in case we ever went off to another war.
Essentially, yeah. I mean, in my era, I think, you know, that changed some. I mean, obviously the nets and the ropes and all that was kind of gone, but I mean, they had, you know, the basic weight rooms and stuff like that. I mean, they had a basic, like, you had to run a mile and whatnot, but I mean, we had recruiters in high school all the time, and I didn't end up getting recruited from high school. I went to them. So, but as a class, we were offered to take the ASVAB once we reached a certain age. And if you wanted to go, you had to go down to the local armory, take the ASVAB, like the pre-ASVAB, and see what you score. And that would determine whether or not you were eligible to get into the military. And then your eligibility for the type of job that you wanted to do. And of course, back then they were offering all kinds of wonderful sign-on bonuses and everything like that. And oh yeah, you're going to get an extra $25,000 if you score this high on the ASVAB, and yeah, go fuck yourself.
Were you guys still required? We were in Ohio in the 90s, fucking square dancing in gym class. What the hell do we have to learn how to square dance for?
No.
Morgan's nodding his head. Did you guys have to do the square dancing in school?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I never understood
why. Understand how that was like a dictated dance. Like, it wasn't like, hey, show up Saturday. No, it was Wednesday at fucking gym class. A girls' class is going to come over. Make sure you guys don't stink. We're going to do the mandatory square dance. Like, what the hell does this have to do? Was it, like, supposed to, like, be for American culture or some shit? And I'm Googling
I've never even heard of this.
Yeah, it was a thing. I'm trying to Google why square dancing was a requirement in schools.
Like, the only... I'm trying to think of, like, the requirements. The high school that I went to in North Carolina... vastly different experience than any of the high schools I would have went to here.
Sure.
Prior to moving. Very different culturally, very different as far as how they discipline their students. That was honestly the first, like, I knew about like corporal punishment and stuff like that, like right back here in my dad's era, but, and even maybe in your guys' era, you know, especially if you lived in a rural, you know, place.
Yeah. My
like
age
Kentucky
group
or something like that. But I went up there and did not expect to be told that, oh yeah, if you fuck up, you're going to go down to the principal's office and you're going to get a paddle on your ass. And I went, what?
I got swatted.
It's like, are you fucking serious?
First grade, Kentucky. So let's see, I was born in 78. So let's go 83-ish was kindergarten. So about 85, maybe, I guess, would have been first, 84, 85 would have been my first grade. It's hard for me to remember because my parents got divorced when I was in first grade, so I got held back, and I did first grade twice, and right, so sometimes it's hard to remember. But yeah, I actually got – something happened, went down to the office, got the swat from the principal, and then you go home, and you know what else happened? You got fucking spanked again fucking four hours later when you went home. I think I found the answer. Let's get educated. It's quick, minute 22.
You probably have a fuzzy memory of trying to master these moves in middle school gym class, am I right? So why were we all forced to couple up and endure this embarrassment? Well, it's all thanks to Henry Ford.
Fucking Henry Ford.
And do-si-do.
He was the father of the car and the assembly line. But here's a little known fact. Henry Ford loved to dance, especially with his wife Clara. Square dancing has deep roots in American culture dating back to colonial times. It remained popular until the waltz and polka went mainstream in the 19th century. So in the 1920s, Ford took it upon himself to revive the old tradition.
Let's do it, y'all.
He opened a ballroom in his hometown and encouraged his factory workers and their families to take part. He felt square dancing helped teach manners, exercise, values, and grace. Soon after, he worked to create a national square dancing program. Boards of education across the country started endorsing Ford's mission, and since then, students have been taught to square dance. Today?
Well, I guess if we had to be forced into one of two of Henry Ford's delusion, I'm glad it was a square dancing and not the anti-Semitism. Just saying. Henry Ford's known for three things. The car, well, I'm sorry, the assembly line, square dancing, and anti-Semitism. So I guess if we had to choose one, grab your partner and let's do-si fucking do.
Now, is square dancing have any similarity to line dancing?
Well, it's in the name. Line dancing, you do in a line, and then more people. Literally, it was a square. You'd have two partners, a partner on each corner, and it was bow to your left, bow to your right, and then do-si-do. That's when you and your partner kind of circle around each other. And then the female, so if I'm standing in the bottom right-hand corner, I would be on the left, she would be on the right, and then the up right-hand corner, that dude would be on the left, and that female, so that when they went down and they would go down and dance together in the center, then go back to their respective corners. It's almost as if we're wrestling, right? And so then I would go to my left and dance with the chick on that, and then she would go back. You're literally dancing in a square. And then I think at some point you actually rotated clockwise around. Yeah, then you would actually grab your partner and then go to that next corner. And it was like, it was a whole thing.
Gotcha.
But you got to keep in mind, this is like usually middle school, right? This is when like boys were like walking around with uncontrollable hard-ons. Fucking girls didn't want anything to do with boys because they had cooties. You know, this is the time when you'd go to the middle school dance. You have like two couples in the center and everybody else just standing up against the wall doing the wallflower thing, which is where the name of the band came from. Wallflower was a term for people who were afraid to dance. And so it would made more sense in high school, but then I guess we would have got a little more out of it. But yeah, so to force middle schoolers to do it. And by the way, middle school is also the time the kids are hitting puberty. No one smells more like onions than a fucking 12 and a half year old boy. They don't wear deodorant. Why is it when teenagers sweat, they smell like onions? It's fucking so weird.
I don't know.
You'd be walking through public.
You got me.
Oh, a kid afoot.
I've been having my kid put on deodorant for the last year.
Like, now, I'm not dealing with are that. They still hooked on the Axe body spray, or have they moved on to something new?
No. When that shit, I don't know when that stuff came out, but I remember it becoming okay. So then, exactly.
I used to refer to it as my lacquer finish.
Right. When that shit came out, the boys' locker room at every school that I have ever been to smelled like fucking BO onions and Axe body spray, like overly done.
I was out of school by the time Axe came out. But yeah, let's find out. Axe body spray, early 2000s, had the very sexual provocative commercials.
I mean, it at least became popular at that time. I mean, maybe it came out in, you know, the late 90s or something, but maybe nobody really knew about it. I don't know. But everybody had a fucking can, and they didn't have deodorant yet. They just had body spray.
Okay, so it originally came out in France, introduced in 1983, but I don't think it made its way over to the United States until the mid-2000s. The pungent legacy of the Axe body spray.
And it was Axe blue. Everybody had Axe fucking blue. Nobody had red. Nobody had green. Nobody. Somebody would have the yellow one every now and again, or the amber one, which was way out in left field. But everybody had blue, and it was overly done. And I was a part of that for a very small portion of my youth. We're talking like a month. I had like one can. I sprayed the shit out of it, and then I got tired of that fucking smell really quick, and I was like, I'm done with this shit. I'd rather just put on regular deodorant.
I used it quite a bit, but it came out when I was in my 20s, and so at that point, I was already two-pack-day smoker, so it came a long way to help cover up that smell. But yeah.
No, I won't even buy that shit for him. I'm not fucking playing that game.
Well, back in my day, it was just cologne. Dudes wore a Nautica Sport, I think it was, and then CK1 was the thing. So our teachers had, I couldn't afford that shit, so it was just Speed Stick for me. But
deodorant?
No, before body spray, it was just dudes who wore cologne, so they'd get Nautica Sport or.
Dad wore original Old Spice. Original. In the white fucking bottle with the little gray tab on top. Original Old Spice.
Okay, it's almost that time
original
of season.
Aftershave.
Yeah, Christmas aftershave is coming up. And so the worst thing for a 13-year-old boy in the 80s and 90s when you would go to the extended family Christmas, right? The aunts, the uncles, the second cousin, the people who don't know you from fucking Steve, like the people who got me a Nittany Lions fucking sweatshirt in my middle school. One, I live in Ohio, too. I don't give a fuck about college sports. But anyhow, the hard rub about being a young poor boy before Axe body spray, somebody would inevitably, and this happened to me 3 years in a row, would get you the Brute shower kit, the Brute flavored soap on a rope, Brute after spray, and then the Brute classic with the green bottle and the little chain. Every year, somebody in that house, and it was me, my brother, and my stepbrother. So we had a lot of Brute going on in the house in the 90s.
That's a classic right there.
It was a classic and it was cheap. And then, so it was, hey, shit, we got the extended family coming over. Let's go down to Walgreens and get the boys something. Ah, here we go. The Brute bath set. Here you go.
Hey, and you were really crazy when you knew that your mom's hippie friend was coming over and she was smelling like straight up patchouli. Oh,
Gordon used to wear that shit in high school. Gordon will probably be ashamed that he wore fucking patchouli oil because he would go down to OSU campus. He graduated in 93. And because we are skateboarders, we were always on the edge of subculture, right? And so while I'm in, you know, when he was in high school, I was in middle school. When he was in middle school, I was in elementary school, which is why when all my contemporaries were listening to New Kids on the Block, Skid Row, MC Hammer, I was listening to Nuclear Assault, Testament, to fucking Dead Milkmen, Anthrax, and Metallica. Because he was always older. But yeah, so after he graduated high school, he went through his Grateful Dead stage. Birkenstocks, fucking tie-dye t-shirts.
He seems like the type.
The patchouli oil.
Everything's got to be natural and about
patchouli's hippie dirt. That's, smelled so bad.
That's basically everybody I went to school with in Oregon.
Yeah. You're like in the pinnacle. They probably invented. They probably invented. patchouli in Oregon with at some fucking witch commune.
I was gonna say they were probably drinking, probably drinking that shit.
You guys are issued Birkenstocks with your fucking driver's license.
So
unless you're real cold, then you head to Tevas or Tevas.
I mean, you know, it's crazy when you think about it. But, you know, growing up in the 70s, you know, we used to go visit my uncle who lived in a commune in the Oregon Coast Range. So all these guys did all day was, you know, smoke dope and blow glass. It was nuts.
Mom, when I grow up, I want to be a glass blower. Why do you want to make statues or beautiful art? No, I want to make pipes and dildos. That's like the two things all glass blowers end up making.
Yeah.
This is Pyrex. You have two options. You can make dildos or pipes. That's is where you're going to start.
That is probably the those are the biggest items, I guess, that glass blowers make today.
Absolutely.
Is glass pipes and fucking dildos.
No, you know like, what I think probably surpassed the dildo would probably be the high-end butt plugs. I think those would probably surpass the dildo.
Yeah.
I had
they're not making no fucking high-end china or anything like that anymore. It's like real nice decorative art pieces. And if they are, there's a fucking stem on the side of it. You can smoke out of it.
This is regional, and I want to apologize, but for Mike and Morgan, if you drive down McGregor and go behind a Florida Institute of the Arts in the field, you'll see a little steel lion, a little cub, and then an elephant and a baby elephant.
Yeah.
Those used to sit on the lanai of a client of mine back when I had my computer firm. They were huge in the art. And inside, when you walk into their huge ass house back in the gated community, I think they lived in the Landings, you would look up and they had this big, I don't know the guy's name, it was all blown glass. And this guy's a famous Italian artist. When they bought it, it was all assembled. They had his different art pieces throughout their old house. And they, as people do down here, they retired. They went to Shell Point, sold all their shit. That stuff went to the art place. A museum came, sent people down to take their big ceiling thing. When I was at the hospital in Florence for my mom's triple bypass, in their lobby, they had that same Italian artist's piece there. But to Mike's point, there's only one or two artists that blow that piece unless you watch the great show on Netflix, Blown Away. Check it out. They're not making any dildos and pipes there, but I think I have heard references of one of the artists talking about that. When you start like at the local glass blown factory where you pay to go there and use our kiln, that's basically, I think they said basically pipes, dildos, and like glass roses are pretty much the thing that every glass blower starts out making.
So was it Chihuly?
Chihuly. Oh, could
be. Yeah, was that the...
Probably. Yeah, most likely.
That's like the big glass artist guy.
Yeah, it looked like a chandelier, but it was made up of individual like glass spermies almost, and all these different shapes, and they would organize them. And the thing stood, like, their house was so big that this thing stood probably 4 feet tall, and it was still 10 feet off the floor. I mean, it was huge.
I think that documentary that you're talking about, I think I watched it like years ago.
What, Blown Away?
A while ago?
No, it's a game show called Blown Away. It's a reality show where people go and they do, it's like they'll have like 15 glass blowers in this huge place. It's really cool. It's on Netflix. Yeah. And they'll get
it's like Forged in Fire.
It's just like Forged in Fire and chefs. Yeah, they would have to make these glass art installations, and it's very cool to see them do this shit. It's very cool. It's called Blown Away. Check it out. It's on Netflix. Carrie and I have seen like that was like the things we got into during 2020, right? During the pandemic, no one was producing shit. Everybody was just putting all these different intellectual properties up. And so we were watching Is It Cake? We were watching Blown Away. We were watching Repair Shopper. So I started watching all these shits on Netflix. But Blown Away is definitely a good one.
Back in the day when Netflix was in its infancy becoming a streaming service as opposed to DVD rentals.
Mm-hmm.
They, you know, I was struggling, new dad.
Sexuality, the whole thing, yeah.
Yeah, sure.
Well, you got the mustache, I'm just saying.
All that stuff, you know, we struggled so bad. I mean, you know, we didn't know month to month if we were going to be able to pay for Netflix.
No, that's why Carrie and I have 200 DVDs. Like, we couldn't afford cable. We'd go to Walmart on Tuesday and wait until shit got moved into the $5 bucket.
That's exactly what we did too. But if you wanted to see like a show or something new or, you know, something like that, you know, you'd pay for Netflix. And back in the day, it was only $7.99 a month.
Yep.
And that was $7.99 a month for the streaming and renting the DVDs.
Yeah, and it was like 40 DVDs in the mail.
But there was this one documentary on there about glass blowing and the art of it, but also the culture of like smoking weed and all that, like going back into the 70s and whatnot, like how it was illegal to blow glass into those kinds of pipes and stuff like that back then.
Well, we joke around about it, the kids nowadays, you know, they don't have to deal with the culture of going to some shady ass dude's house on the bad side of town to get a fucking dime bag at 2 o'clock in the morning on a Saturday and then hope you don't get pulled over on the way home and have your entire life run your car impounded and tickets and fees and arrested and all that shit.
Right.
They also don't know, they didn't have to experience, I mean, you probably still in some places like Florida, for example, you walk into a head shop, everything was a tobacco pipe. You said weed, you're fucking running your shit out the goddamn door. Because you're breaking the loophole, right? Because even when even when weed was a Schedule I narcotic, you're buying these for your tobacco products. But yeah.
Well, and like nowadays, you can walk into any corporate gas station. And it's all glass pipes. It's all glass pipes. It's
and they're so cheap.
Rolling papers.
It's so cheap.
It's like fucking $2.
That shit used to be an investment. Like, dude, do I want to spend $45 on something you're going to break when you're hiding it from your dad?
Yeah. Yeah. But so, it's all open now. Like, I think it still says tobacco.
Oh, yeah.
But I mean, they've got weed leaves all over the place. You know, they're selling hats that have weed leaves on them, and you know, they say weed across the front of them. Like, there's no denying what the fuck this shit is here for. So
we were joking about how glass blowing is the first steps are making dildos and pipes. Is it not surprising? You know what they call the kiln, the big flaming bucket you put the stick in, and you blow. You know what that's called? They call it the glory hole.
Ooh.
You're blown away.
You stick the blowpipe in it.
Got to put your rod in the glory hole. Yep. So, Morgan, you got some exciting news.
Yeah, I got a little bit. I got a new job this week.
Same field?
So,
yay.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah.
So, is there more of a... go ahead.
It's actually a company that I've worked for in the past, just a different location. So, be doing a little road trip, going to become a full-time RVer for the next few months. See how that works out.
You're going to become a bum, Jules. Just say it. Roam the earth. No, you're going to become a bum.
Yeah. Basically, I'm going to live in a van down by the river.
Now,
embrace your full day.
You live in, you work in the propane and propane accessory business. No, you work in the compressed gas business of different flavors and flammability levels.
Morgan.
But I was wondering if in Alabama, perhaps that industry has more of a heavier use because there's probably a lot of old houses in that still have the 100-pound fucking gas tank in the back of their yard on their 10 acres of property out in the, you know what I mean?
I think he said he was going to Mississippi, not Alabama.
Mississippi, Alabama. It's all the same.
It's all the same.
So tell that
to somebody from Alabama.
I'm gonna be is basically where Mississippi, Alabama, and Florida all come together.
Tri-state area
for a while.
I'm sure the phrase tri-state area will be thrown around a bit.
So basically, a lot of industry where I'm going, a lot of shipyards, a lot of refineries, gas and oil are pretty big. So it's going to be, a change from what Florida, especially Fort Myers area, because everything here is, you know, hospitality and what supports the hospitality. So there's not a lot of manufacturing here.
Yeah.
So
Morgan makes propane and propane accessories.
God damn it.
God damn it.
Now, the reason I'm bringing this up is I think, for full disclosure, Mike and I, we might owe the fishing community a huge apology. You were saying that the price of a fishing license in Mississippi, Alabama, Florida, tri-state area where you're moving to. Now, I'm assuming because you don't have a permanent address, this is non-residential rate?
Yeah, non-resident rate. Looks like it's $68.
That's the price of a new rod. Now, the reason Mike and I may owe the fishing community apologies, we go on these diatribes about what kind of loser can't get a $14 a year fishing license. Well, I guess perhaps if it came down to getting a brand new Cass King rod or getting a piece of paper, are they really going to find me down at the local watering hole? I mean, that's a bit of a rub, man. That's almost real money.
If you're fishing on private property, you don't need a license. So, going to see if I can find, somebody to let me fish their pond so I don't have to buy one. But I also don't know, Ben, and I want to tie this in into something else. There might, like my Florida license is dirt cheap.
$14 a year,
$20 a year for everything. I have fresh salt.
Yeah, we've talked about this in the past with your
birds.
Yeah, with your deer, old man discount. Yeah.
Well, no, because I get the military gold for being a veteran.
Yeah, but just base level, it's $14 for just any schmuck off the street, which is affordable. I mean, you can't get 3 packs of worms for $14, so there's no reason in the state of Florida not to have a fishing license. But $69.80, that's a whole different ball of wax.
Well,
Now, if you're fishing as much as we do, okay. Yeah. But if you're like a 5-time-a-year... You might say, fuck it, let's risk it.
Have you looked at the FWC license prices lately? Because the Gone Fishing package, which is saltwater, freshwater, and all the accoutrement that goes with it, is $54.
See, I only do freshwater. I think I do freshwater, and it's like, an extra $7 for the saltwater, so I'm $26 bucks into it for the year.
Right.
But then again, I'm fishing 3-4 days a week, so you break it down, it's like pennies a trip. It's simply pennies a day to feed a family of four.
When I came down here to vacation, I had to get my license, and for a 3-day saltwater fishing license without the snook stamp, I think it was without, was $17 for 3 days. So
yeah,
I mean they.
So once I get there, I'll figure out if there's a veterans discount or something, and maybe they'll take it easy on me because I don't intend to give up fishing.
Okay, here
Might
we go.
Have to give up kayaking, but
you know, I thought about you the other day because remember I told you I see a lot of kayaks roasting away in the sun. Well, these one people have 2 Lifetime Tetons, the same one I have and Carrie have, that would sit in the back of their fucking yard. One of them is underwater underneath their dock, and it's all green. And I was about to go knock on the door, like, "Are you guys going to recover this kayak? Because if not, I know somebody. I'll fucking tie a rope to it and pull that shit out of there." Because that's the same one that I had. Fun fact: here we go. 2024 fishing license cost by state. Number 2 makes sense, but here we go. Alabama annual resident fishing license $16.15. Freshwater $28.50 for saltwater. Non-annual resident license $52.60 for freshwater, $61.35 for salt. Now, I don't know if that means you can get both of them for the price of one if you go saltwater, if you still got to buy individual licenses. Or $7.30 a day for residentials, 7 days for $35. Alaska.
That's nuts.
Alaska is interesting. They don't divide. It's if you're a resident, it's $20 a year. Salt, fresh, whatever. Non-residential is $100.
Which, well, just think about the revenue that they generate.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because what does everybody do when they go to Alaska? They go salmon fishing. That's why you go to Alaska. Either that or to kiss an iceberg,
or a halibut or something like that.
Now, I don't consider this state the top of my list for going fishing. I don't know how much fishing you can get done in the state of fucking Arizona. $55 non-resident for a year to fish in the desert.
You figure, does the Grand Canyon?
I don't know. You can go fish Lake Havasu.
Yeah.
What's the Grand Canyon go through?
Oh yeah, Colorado River goes through there, I think.
Yeah.
Arkansas, $50 for non-resident. This does not surprise me in the goddamn least. California, who wants to guess on the non-residential fishing rate for a year?
$175.
Mike?
I was going to go $80.
Morgan's almost close. Now, I like California, right? California's like, we can't just say $199. That sounds like we just made the shit up. So we got to make it look like we did some math, like you're some fucking regular... $166.89. So that's for non-residential. For residential, $61.82.
Oh.
Colorado non-residential, $111. So they're second place behind California. Let's see here. We'll just go through real quick. Delaware, $22. Florida. Okay, yep. Florida, freshwater, $17 for residential. Saltwater, $17. For non-residential, $47. Hawaii, super cheap, $6 for residential, $26 for non-residential. I guess they figure you spend that money to fly down there. Why bust your balls over a fishing license?
But is that for the year?
Yeah.
Okay.
For the year.
So it's a yearly thing.
Hawaii, you can go to $11 for 7 day, or non-resident 30 day pass for $21, which is only $4 for the year. So you might as well just, you know, give them the extra $4 and let it ride.
Yeah.
But yeah, it looks like those are the most outrageous. Oregon, $110.50 non-residential.
Doesn't surprise me. A lot of steelhead, you know, people go fish steelhead there. So
Texas, you can go 30 for fresh, 35 for salt, or just make it even 40 for everything for residential.
But see, a lot of states, like, because you know they have like bass tournaments and stuff like that, they like, I know Florida for sure offers special fishing licenses for
special fishing tournaments
and stuff like that. So you don't actually have to pay anything. If you're only going to be in town for, you know, 4 days or something and you're fishing a tournament, that's under a certain category that you can apply for. As long as you have the right credentials for it. So anybody that like does tournament fishing or anything like that, like they're not always paying, you know, for a fishing license at every state. Like that would be probably like a fifth of what they're paying. Wow. If they were going to every single one of these states and paying for these fucking fishing licenses.
Could you imagine winning
the ones that are over $100?
Could you imagine winning the Bassmaster tournament in California? How much money would go from your fucking prize money to taxes?
For real.
You know, the hate of state, city, local. Get you coming and going.
Yeah, for sure.
No, thank you.
So, for a minute, like to recognize we had Veterans Day the other day.
Yes, sir.
So... Mike, thanks for your service.
Same back to you, buddy.
So I've got a ton of veteran friends, so I'm not even going to try to begin to give everybody shout outs, but
yeah,
I do have two family members that that served. My Uncle Richard served in Vietnam. Not 100% sure what he did, because when he came home, he never talked about it. Yeah. And of course I was young, you know, I was like 7, 8 years old when, you know, he decided that he was going to go see the world. And so, I haven't talked to him, you know, 40 plus years. Yeah. Don't know if he's still around or what, but yeah, you know, my blood still, you know, wanted to recognize. And then, my father-in-law, he served during Vietnam, didn't see any combat, but he actually served in the same National Guard unit that I did.
Nice.
Just, you know, a bunch of years apart. But yeah, so, you know, shout out to my Uncle Richard, wherever you might be. And, you know, in memory of John Ostergren, captain in the 2nd Battalion, 218th Field Artillery in Portland, Oregon.
Yeah, I'll throw that out as well. My best friend and, friend of the show, Ron, served in Afghanistan. We served during the same time period. We did not serve.
He was 82nd, correct? Or 101st?
Yes. I think he was 82nd.
Yeah. Yeah, because I think the 101st would still hadn't been brought back yet.
Yeah. But, yeah, he served. I don't remember how long he was there for. I do know that he did definitely see combat. So thanking him for his service. And some uncles and an aunt that served, and as well as a buddy of mine that's still serving today. That's on, I think he's done 3 tours so far in Afghanistan. I don't know if he's going to be doing any more, but I think he's in it for the long haul. I think he's going to try and retire out. He joined in the same year that I did in 2009.
Wow.
And he's still going strong. So, and then a memorial to a friend of mine. Sergeant Tramell Lockwood, friend of mine that actually committed suicide, like I think 6 months or a year after I got out. Good guy, a smile that could light up a room, like that. I mean, just instantly would make you feel better. And didn't know him for very long. Didn't know a shit ton about him, but good dude nonetheless. And definitely gone too soon, fighting whatever demons that he was fighting. But yeah, definitely throwing out the
my niece is currently in the Air Force and my nephew is currently in the Army.
Thanks. So I got two more. I got the two most important ones. I wanted to save them for last.
Okay.
Both of my sons,
there you go,
served Army. My oldest, 2nd Battalion Rangers. Not sure exactly how many times he went to Iraq and Afghanistan, but I know he's been there a bunch. And my youngest son, he was attached to a maintenance unit. Apparently, they got on the do not deploy list before he got in. So he spent all of his time stateside. But like we've talked about in the past, where you served and how you served is not as important as that you served.
Mm-hmm.
So shout out to all of them.
Absolutely.
We're about to embark.
And actually, hang on, Don.
Yep.
I'd like to give Don a little bit of recognition. Don's not a veteran by the government's application of the word, but he definitely keeps our guys alive and our, you know, the people that we learned from, you know, doing the World War II reenacting and things like that. So he definitely keeps it you know, in the forefront for sure, and doing the reenacting. So, you know, thanks to him as well for doing what he does on a regular
basis. Absolutely.
Yeah, that's fucking awesome.
Well, I appreciate that, but I intentionally go out of my way when Veterans Day, Memorial Day, anything, Armed Services Day, anytime any of those days rolls around, you will not see me posting a picture of me, any World War II event. Go out of my way not to do anything with the uniform. But it's interesting. I think we talked about this before. There are a lot of guys who did serve who do World War II reenacting because A, they love military history, obviously, but B,
yeah,
obviously it's not comparable, but compared to civilian life, it's the closest thing they can get back for a weekend of being back with the boys. Because, you know, after the event's home, you're sitting around and sleeping in tents, got the uniforms on, you're busting people's balls, you're bullshitting. And so, and speaking of Airborne, I won't say his name, but one of the guys I reenact with, he does German. He was also 82nd Airborne in the 80s and 90s. The impact his body went through being an Airborne, I don't know about combat, anything like that, just but the heavy loads. Over like the last 5 years, like his walk has gotten progressively worse. This year, when I was at the event 2 weekends ago, like he's almost unable to walk unassisted now. Like just his body's, and he's only maybe 15 years older than me. His body's just breaking down from the abuse that he took from just, you know, being in the Airborne and going through all that.
Yeah.
It's so hard to watch.
So my, one of my drill sergeants was a Ranger, and those guys are so hardcore that when you finish Ranger school, the last thing you do is a jump. And then it's like a, you know, I don't know, 15, 20 mile ruck.
Yeah.
And he, when he landed, he broke both his legs.
Oh, Jesus. And still rucking.
And they're like, oh, okay, you're done. And he's like, yeah, fuck that.
Yep.
So he, you know, they weren't compound fractures when he started. Oh, but by the end of this 15 mile ruck, he had actually finished breaking his legs, sticking out of the skin.
Ugh,
and God. But he finished, because he's like
falling across the finish line.
Yeah, he goes, I didn't go through all this to not finish.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's like how hardcore, insane, badass you got to be to do some of this stuff.
VA looked at him and said, that's 10%.
Yeah. That's interesting too.
That's not service connected.
Right. My first sergeant before I went to basic training, because I went into ready reserve where you would do like a lot of your pre-basic stuff and handle it then, so that you were a little bit more prepared, as opposed to like, you know, you sign up, you go to MEPS and you're right off to basic training and you know jack shit. So
yeah,
our first sergeant in that unit, he was trained as an airborne ranger, and he went through and did, I mean, he was a, you want to talk about fucking American badass right there, that he was a bad motherfucker. And he competed in the Ranger games.
And
think in the entire country, he placed like sixth or seventh.
Wow.
Out of everybody that went through the games. So, I mean, even that, I don't care if you place in the top 10,
yeah,
you know, the top 20, even if you just go, like, you're just David Goggins look like a bitch. Like really, I mean, but he placed, you know, within the top 10. So, I mean, he was a bad fucking dude. And
well, that's the kind of guy that you lower your voice when you talk to him.
Yeah.
I mean.
Yeah.
And not intentionally, your bravado just sleeps out your butthole and you just slowly lower your voice.
Exactly. He was a cool dude though too. He was, you know, I mean, you had respect for him obviously because he's the first sergeant of the company, but I mean, he was just like, you know, he was there to train. He wasn't there to be Mr. Puffed Out Chest. I'm a fucking airborne ranger. I'm Mr. Cool. I've done all this shit. I mean, he was just a cool dude. I got to ride with him in his personal truck and shit. And we talk and whatnot. It was a pretty cool experience.
Now, so, Mike, you probably won't be able to relate to this because, you know, you served in time where they had modern military vehicles, but Morgan might be able to understand this.
Well, wait a minute, because my modern military vehicles were from his era, so.
Yeah, but his modern military vehicles were from 1943 because, you know, they hadn't rolled out all the upgraded shit yet. But, you know, he comes from the world of drum brakes. Yeah. So 2 weeks ago, I'm at this event, and the museum point A is at one in the train track, and the museum point B is at the other, actually point C. And so we have to get our guys from point A, tell them go to point B, and the rest of us go to point C.
Yeah.
But we try to do this with what military vehicles we have available to us, so that's less modern day cars possibly being seen. And besides, you don't want a bunch of assholes and fucking with knives and entrenching tools and heavy pokey things on their belt sitting on your leather seats or climbing the back of your truck, because that's how your clear coat on your brand new painted Tundra gets scratched. Ask me how I know. And so we have the Bouvet brothers, who are from Naples. They got their weapons carrier all loaded up. And then there's this Jeep driver. God bless his heart. He's there. He's like 79 and a half. And I'm like, well, we got to get that. How many people can you fit in your Jeep beside you? He said three, one in the passenger seat and two in the back. Well, we had three in the back, me being a third one. And he had like, so I'm sitting on the back of his seat, but I'm using his spare tire as a sissy bar, like on a motorcycle. And then I'm just holding on to his fucking 30 cal as just a handle. We're driving down this, we're driving down the road through a parish, the main two-lane thoroughfare, speed limit's 55. He's got this thing gunned at 35, right? I'm sitting up on top of the fucking back seat, which means my head's above the windshield. I'm holding on his 30 cal, and the whole thing's shaking like we're fucking coming in the re-entry. But he's like 79. His eyesight's not what it once was, and his fucking reflex is not what it once was. And we got drum brakes. And in my mind, I'm thinking, this is how I'm going to fucking die. Because every once in a while, the road would dip, and the Jeep would sway. I'm sitting up on top of the seat. My helmet's not on. I'm like, I'm going to fucking die. He's going to fucking take this thing off the road. I'm going to fly out of this fucking Jeep and land on my head. This is how I'm going to go out, dying in a World War II Jeep, wearing full World War II uniform, driving down to do a fucking silly train event. Like, and because I know the history, I'm like, you know how many fucking soldiers died after World War II waiting to go home in fucking Jeep accidents? And here I am riding fucking people right behind us trying to honk at us. And he just keeps swerving. I'm thinking drum brakes, fucking old bias ply tires, 80-year-old driver. I'm like, this is how it ends. And it's just like, it was like these. And I've ridden in deuce and a half, fucking weapons carriers, tanks, but I think primarily it was the age of the driver that really got me. I was like, oh, God, like, yeah. this is it for me. I'm flying out of this fucking Jeep, and I'm going to land on my head.
In my unit, we actually had two deuce and a halves still in service that were assigned to our fueler, who was actually my buddy that's still in, that's probably going to retire out. He was the only fueler in our unit. And that's, I think it's a 92 Fox, and their nickname is Fireball. And he was in charge of the two deuce and a halves that were in the very back of the lot that were old, decrepit, and falling apart. And he's like, yep, here's my trucks.
I was actually a mechanic.
Yeah.
And our unit, everything we had, well, I can't say that. The majority of what we had was the Kaiser, you know, deuce and a half.
Yeah.
We had a couple of AM General 5-tons, which were, you know, relatively new in the scheme of things.
Yeah.
And we had just gotten rid of all of our Jeeps and replaced them with Humvees. And then our wrecker was an Oshkosh Hemet, which was really cool to drive. I enjoyed the heck out of that.
Yeah.
But yeah, all of our stuff was, yeah, or the majority of it, like our guns were World War II surplus, our trucks were Vietnam, and about the time I got out, we had just transitioned to where we had gotten the Vietnam era guns that we could tow with the Humvees. So we got rid of all the deuce and a half shortly after I got out.
That's interesting, but, too. Because I had the 5-tons became popular right around the time that you were in, and they were probably going and deploying with those and training with them at the time. And then anybody that was in a regular unit that, you know, had trucks were still using the old shit until all of it got recycled out. So we had the 5-ton FMTVs and I think it was the FM TVs, and I was assigned that, and I was actually the only, I think I was the only soldier in my unit that was licensed, because you have to get licensed. You have to get licensed. So I was licensed on a 5-ton, and I was one of the only soldiers in my unit to be licensed on a Humvee, fully up armored Humvee. And
oh wow,
we went on a training exercise once, and trying to stop a fully up armored Humvee in a convoy going 65 mile an hour down the road is not fucking easy.
Yeah, like I said on the Jeep, I feel like I'm coming back. I'm re-entering the atmosphere.
Exactly.
Oh yeah.
Exactly. I mean, they don't. Well, I don't think the Humvees have air brakes. At least not the ones that I was using.
Oh no, they don't.
Drum brakes.
They were all. They were actually all
pneumatic,
like portal axles, and the right. discs were like inboard
on the chunk,
tucked up underneath. Yeah, right next to the differential.
Right.
So, awful vehicle to work on.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Great vehicle to drive, but they were just absolutely terrible to work on. I hated them.
There's a company in the Philippines called MD Juan that's re-stamping out Willys-style Jeep chassis to rebuild old.
Oh, nice.
To rebuild old. They make the military model and the civilian model. So if you have an old Jeep frame and you need all the panels, they just started. They're stamping out panels, and they're like almost getting to the point where they can mass produce Willys-style Jeeps again.
Oh, nice. That would be awesome.
What would the import tax on that would be?
Say, Mike,
how many runaways did you have while you were working on Humvees and cat motors and stuff like that? Like, how many of them just decided to take off like a fucking rocket ship?
Actually, I never experienced that with really? One of those. But I did have a couple of the old, Kaiser engines that just kind of ran away. and it's pretty cool when it finally decides that it can't do anymore.
Right.
Because, I mean, I wasn't going to try to get in there and pull the manual shut off under the hood.
No.
So it just ran until, the pistons were, liberated from their cylinder bores.
Yeah. And see, they had actually all the trucks that I was working with, even the 917s, which were the semi up armored trucks, because when I was in training, you would train on the 917 semis, the FMTVs, LMTVs, and I want to say the LMTV, but it was the one that was like a fucking 8-wheel. Big long son of a bitch that some of them would have like this crane boom that would grab a Connex and then load it on the back of it. I forget what it was called. Mm-hmm. But you would train on all that, and you would have to pass your test on everything, but your unit didn't have all those vehicles. It was just based on what, surplus and inventory that, you were given and the unit was assigned. So, but all of the transmissions in the vehicles that I was using were actually automatics. Mm-hmm. And you could run, it was almost like vehicles today where, it was literally a button. It wasn't even a shifter anymore. It was R and D, and then you had up arrow and down arrow if you needed to manually shift it. And they had a 7-speed transmission with a cat D something engine in underneath the cab. And they were all cab over trucks. Except for the 917. But
yeah, so my first maintenance vehicle was a 75 Dodge 1-ton with a 440 4-barrel under it.
Nice.
The thing was awesome. It had 727 automatic with the HUD on the back of it for us to store all our tools in.
Sure.
For the purpose of time, not to cut you off, but we're already 108 minutes into this. for the purpose of time. Okay.
Hold on, before we wrap, I got one thing.
Well, I have a thing too before we wrap, but yeah, go ahead.
But back to what you were talking about, Mike, with your buddy who lost his battle with the demons.
Yeah.
We've got a really, really bad problem with veteran suicide.
Yeah.
22 veterans
a day
lose their battle with the demons. So 988 is the suicide
hotline.
You know, suicide crisis hotline. Please, 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 from one vet to another, if you're having problems, reach out to somebody. Reach out to us. Reach out to 988, the VA, somebody.
Anybody.
Because, we've all been through a lot, and we've been trained to compartmentalize. But that's not, that's not always the right way.
Yeah.
So, if you need help, reach out for it.
Absolutely.
There's no shame. So.
Absolutely.
So if you guys aren't doing anything on Tuesday, you want to come over and help me take down my fence? That's right, ladies and gentlemen. We might have a late season hurricane. I'm looking at the spaghetti map. We have three routes heading over top of us. 99L Ibis. Right now it's still a depression, but this thing's two of the routes have it basically coming right over us. So we might get a Cat 3 hurricane by Wednesday, just to throw that out there.
It's supposed to be Tropical Storm 19.
No, it's 99L Invest is what they're calling it. It's
that's going to be Sarah.
Yeah, it's going to be Sarah.
Gets to be a storm. And I'm praying that the models that they're not focusing on, that have it either, doing a U-turn and heading back towards Cuba.
Please.
Or shooting the gap between Cuba and Florida.
Right.
Because the Big Bend can't handle another one. We really, none of us in here in Florida can really handle another storm.
I'm so over it. And like we were saying 2 or 3 weeks ago, even if we don't have the storm line on top of you, just the financial impact of preparing for a storm that you hope doesn't come here is just...
And I'm supposed to be leaving next week, so that's going to be really interesting.
Yeah, then you're going to have the guilt of your wife being here while you're out of town. You're going to be kind of like how I was for Milton. I'm up there like, okay, do I stay up here and watch it from afar and feel guilty because everybody's back there, but yours different. You have a job to get to, but it's just like fucking, I thought we were done for the year.
If you need my help, let me know.
I'm getting pretty proficient at it now. It only took us an hour and a half to take it down last time.
Yeah.
Took me a little longer to put it up,
but after you do it enough times, you get to be really good at it.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Really. That's why
too much practice with this shit this year.
Yeah. Well, the last couple of years, that's why my wife and I are like, I'm like, I don't want to live near the coast.
Yeah.
Wind damage I can deal with. It's the fucking surge. Mm-hmm. And I don't know what it's just getting worse and worse and worse and worse. And the further closer to the coast you are, the worse it gets. So.
Well, I'll tell you what got us this last time was the tornadoes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That was scary.
And that was not a pleasant thing to go through.
Exactly.
So.
Yeah. And what, the people in North Carolina, what they're dealing with. I mean, could you imagine if this did a Helene, took the same path and, obviously the storm surge and all that's like a once in a lifetime type thing to come from a hurricane. But I mean, even still high winds right now would not be good for them.
I lived in Western North Carolina, man. They can't handle that kind of stuff. They cannot handle torrential downpours like that. And, my wife's grandmother was in Asheville when the storm was coming through. And luckily she was in a part of Asheville that didn't have those, big mudslides and rivers overflowing and stuff like that. The biggest issue that she
wasn't on top of the lithium mines?
No.
Right.
But she,
funny how that works.
She was, you know, obviously she didn't have power. She didn't have, you know, running water, and her roads and everything like that were all blocked off. But, you know, luckily her house managed to survive, and
you know,
that's good.
I've joked about this in the past, but this is a perfect example of when it comes to these tornadoes and hurricanes. You know, when I lived in California, I got in an argument with the secretary at my job, who was a proud Californian, when I told her that California had nicer ghettos than Ohio and Kentucky did.
Yeah.
And she could understand, like, no, I'm not talking about, like, threat and people shoot. I'm talking about the physical houses. No, these houses are your houses are made out of stucco and block. You live in the desert. They, you know, they're falling apart. But when you're poor in the Midwest and you got to live through winters and you're living in houses that are, some of them are built in the 1800s that are termite.
Made out of wood.
Fucking slats, old newspaper, you know, termites. A 50-mile-an-hour gust of wind could fuck some shit up on a 100-year-old wooden house that's been rotting away because you can't afford to paint it every year and patch it up. And the infrastructure is old as shit. You know, a lot of people still have cisterns and, you know, old telephone poles from fucking 1938, 1962 when it got replaced after some drunk hit it. But other than that, the impact that the weather has on older wooden infrastructure is just astounding. I mean, we're lucky enough here. We basically, you know, I think some of the houses we have down here are probably more fortified than some of the bunkers they had in France, but you know, it's, we're cinder block reinforced with rebar and concrete. I mean, as long as you got Simpson straps in your attic, you're good to go.
Yeah.
Yeah,
absolutely.
But yeah, it's like, fuck me, right?
Yep.
Oh, 100%.
Keeps on coming.
Yep. Yes, sir.
But that's going to wrap it up for this episode of the What's in Your Head podcast. Thank you guys so much for joining us for another episode. Big news on the social media front. Mike has recently launched and took it upon himself to run the new What's in Your Head Discord channel. I believe I posted a link on our Facebook page that said join in on the chat. So if you have Discord, just go ahead and find the server and join, and if you don't, just go ahead and download it and go through the fun. There's nothing more fun than fucking creating a new social media page account, right? It's just like,
well, that's what I had to do because I didn't know what Discord was until, well, I mean, you know, the Webster's Dictionary of Discord, but you know,
argument between two people. But no, the only reason I had Discord is when I got this new video card, I tried to do the Grand Theft Auto art roleplay servers on the internet. They're basically they're modified games. My video card will handle it, but my processor, I need a new motherboard, processor, and RAM. But how you join these servers, you have to go through their Discord and join and then get invites to there because they're privately held servers. So I had it from that, but sadly this computer, I got a great video card, but my motherboard my computer won't even run Windows 11. So that's probably going to be my next bigger investment. But that's going to wrap it up. So find their Discord, head over to whatsinyourhead.com, and you can find all the links to our social media for myself, Mike, and Morgan. Who knows? Morgan's next episode may be from his van down by the river with his $80 a year fishing license. That remains to be seen. But for myself, Mike, and Morgan, we will talk to you all next week.
This has been a Digital 410 production.